So I'm going to start tonight by reading a letter from a Zen master that actually lived in the 11th century. He's very famous. His name is Yuan Wu, and he was born in 1063, died sometime in 1100s, and he was one of the two compilers of the most famous book, if you want to call it that, in Zen, called the Blue Cliff Record, or the Hekigan Roku, which is a remarkable text. It's a collection of 100 koan with commentaries and notes. And he wrote the commentaries and notes. So in Japanese, his name would be Engo. And the Japanese name of the Chinese master who also compiled this was Secho. So this is Yuan Wu, or Engo in Japanese. Now, he wrote many letters during his teaching career to students, kind of what we might call email. They had letters. And this is from one of the letters that he wrote to a student. And I'm going to read just part of it and then make this sort of a launching off point to talk about something exceedingly important in our practice. So the title of this, which I don't think matters that much and doesn't really apply to the rest of it, but I'll give you the title. It's Make Enlightenment Your Standard. And I'll start reading this here. Fundamentally, this great light is there, with each and every person right where they stand, empty, clear through, spiritually aware, all pervasive. It is called the scenery of the fundamental ground. Sentient beings and Buddhas are both inherently equipped with it. It is perfectly fluid and boundless, fusing everything within it. It is within your own heart, and is the basis of your physical body and of the five clusters of form, sensation, conception, motivational synthesis, and consciousness. It has never been defiled or stained, and its fundamental nature is still and silent. False thoughts suddenly arise and cover it over and block it off and confine it within the six sense faculties and sense objects. Sense faculties and sense objects are paired off, and you get stuck and begin clinging and getting attached. You grasp at all the various objects and scenes and produce all sorts of false thoughts and sink down into the toils of birth and death, unable to gain liberation. So let's stop there for a moment. So he's talking about this. He said, fundamentally, this great light is there, this great light. Now, I can say that what we are doing here is learning to expose and become very clear and very familiar with what he is calling this great light, very directly, without conceptual thinking. Now, to do this, we have to go through certain steps, critical steps. The single, probably most important step in doing this is the very first step. And that's what I taught three people tonight. And this step is what you could call, generally speaking, concentration. And then I add in something called Jori-ki, which is the tremendous centeredness, settledness of this Zazen posture. The intentness of it and its centeredness in your hara. So this whole thing, concentration centered in your hara, in the Zazen posture, is a critical first step, but the critical step. Why? You notice Yuan Wu talked about what covers up this great light. He said here, false thoughts suddenly arise and cover it over and block it off and confine it within the six sense faculties and sense objects. In other words, false thoughts arise and you're stuck in a picture of the world that involves an entity with characteristics that has a name and it's your name, and a world outside you that has its names, its valences, its comparisons, its importances, whether you like it and whether you don't like it, and whether you reject it or cling to it. So now we're floating in this sphere of false thinking. What this first step of Zazen does is it collapses that sphere, collapses it instantly into what is. Now, I'd love to use this quantum physics analogy, because quantum physics, first of all, is probably one of the cutting edges of science. But it's also the way that we have taken all our technology, every bit of experience since the beginning of humankind, and every advanced technology we have, the greatest minds, to penetrate into the most intimate aspect of what we call matter, stuff. And what we find when we go down to that depth, in other words, we're not approximating the world, we're going into the very essence, the heart of what we call the outside world, we find a remarkable fact, remarkable, that the world only comes into being when it's observed. How amazing. What do I mean by that? I've described this before, the double slit experiment. Some of you may have heard of it. But if you were, and they can do this, emit a single photon of light. A photon now is, could be a particle, it could be what we call a wave. A single photon, what do we mean by wave? What we mean by a wave is that it's everywhere at the same time. This photon is everywhere at the same time. But there's certain places it's highly likely to be, and certain places highly unlikely to be. And when it's projected onto a screen through two slits, all you see is a wave pattern, which is the interference of the two possibilities going through one slit or the other slit, and they reinforce in certain places where it's most likely to be, and they cancel out in others, and you get a wave pattern. Now, this is the remarkable aspect of this. This is the mind-blowing thing. Even scientists' minds are blown when they contemplate it. They can't get their minds totally around it. If you know, you don't have to see this photon at all. You just have to know which slit it went through. By, let's say, putting a sensor in one slit. Now, this photon is a wave initially. But when you look at a slit, you can say whether this photon, which now that you're observing becomes a particle, has passed through that slit or hasn't. When that photon's fired off, what happens when you are watching one of those slits? When you look at the screen behind, the wave pattern is gone and it's a single dot. The photon became a photon. It was only by observing it became a photon. It's only by observing the world that it becomes the world. Before you observe it, it's a cloud of probability. It's anxieties, it's plans, it's hopes, it's dreams, it's attachments. It's selected what we call, in quotes, memories of the past, which are very nebulous, and all the habit patterns that come about. Until you observe the world, when you observe the actual world, it collapses. The cloud of probability collapses, and it becomes what? Just this. Just this. This is the core of practice. Core. This is what I taught three people tonight. How to collapse the cloud of probability. Now in our Zazen, we collapse the cloud of probability by observing. Observing. How do we do this? How do we do this? So Yuan Wu here talks about these false thoughts. What do I do? I got these false thoughts. How do I collapse false thoughts? How do you collapse them? See that they are sensations. A thought is actually a sensation. Now remember what he said here. He talked about the five clusters. So this is the five skandhas. Alright, so in Buddhism there's a teaching that this so-called self, which I like to call an entity with characteristics, we identify with something walled off. It has a name and it has a history. It has a series of habit patterns, and it has a feeling tone of being a self. But if you look very, very closely at it, if you don't approximate, but you look intimately at it, in other words, you collapse its cloud of probability, what do you find? You find, according to Buddhism, five heaps. And these are described as, in Wanwu's letter here, he said clusters of form, meaning what you see visually, like the form of something, its shape and color. Sensation, so let's add in smell, taste, touch, and thought. And thought is a sensation. There are actually six senses in this practice. The sixth sense, and I mentioned this to the new folks tonight, is thinking is a sense. It's experienced. It takes a form. It takes a particularity. Okay? And he went on to talk about conception. Now this is another level of thinking. When you see something and name it and put in a framework, that also is one of the heaps that creates the concatenation, the illusion of an entity. And he also mentions motivational senses, which would be like your intention, including intending to hold on to something or reject it. And the last one is what we call consciousness, which is this integrated sense of being an entity, being a self, being a knower standing apart. And when you look at this so-called self, what you find are all these disparate parts that only when we fuzzy-mindedly step back and approximate it seems to take the form of a self which we give a name to. Now in our zazen we collapse it. How do you collapse this false thinking? False thinking arises in zazen. Here I am, I'm working on my breath and thoughts are coming and I'm thinking about what I have to do right after I leave here. The fact I have to buy milk, I can't forget to buy milk, my wife will yell at me, whatever it might be. See that process of one thought leading to another thought, leading to another thought. One idea leading to another idea, leading to another idea. This is the so-called cloud of probability. See it as a sensation. You're sensing thought. What's happened? It's collapsed. It's become a sensation. Now, as a sensation, it takes its place with all the other sensations, including the smell of the incense here, including the sound of my voice, including the feeling of your knees on the mat. It's a sensation just like all of those. And you can't find dividing lines. Only through naming are there dividing lines. But it's actually one synthetic fabric of sensation. This is the collapsed cloud of probability. Now, this is the mind-blowing thing about it. When you collapse the cloud of probability, it's just like this wave pattern of the photon going through the two slits. The moment you know that it either went through one of the slits or didn't, it ends up a dot and that's done. Done. Now you might say, I wish the dot ended up over here, or I'm really happy that it ended. It doesn't matter what you think, what you feel, how you react to it, whether you hold, it's done. It ended up at this one particular point, and that is exactly the way our life is moment after moment. When we collapse the cloud of probability, when we, through our practice of zazen and bringing it into our everyday life of attentiveness of what you might call mindfulness, you are collapsing your cloud of probability. You are entering the actual world, which is done. Why is that important? Because if it's done, clinging to it is changing every moment. Or pushing it away, it's done, are irrelevant. This is the very beginning of what you could call dispassion. You are starting to unhook yourself from the clouding, troubling, smothering effect of false thinking. When you realize that false thinking is a sensation, and the moment you observe it and notice the sensation of it, you've collapsed it. You can't take the thought back. You can't change that thought. That thought has been thought. It's done. Now you can, in Zen, what we call, put it down. Okay? Let me read a little further. So, he goes on to say, all the Buddhas and ancestral teachers awakened to this true, now he uses this word for the first time, source. Awakened to this true source and penetrated clear through to the fundamental basis. It's the same thing. the source and the basis, the scenery of the fundamental ground. These are all the same thing. What he initially called the great light, they're all the same thing. They took pity on all the sentient beings, meaning any being that senses, that experiences, sunk in the cycle of birth and death, constantly chasing after things and running from other things, and were inspired by great compassion. So they appeared in the world precisely for this reason. It was also for this reason that Bodhidharma came from the West with a special practice outside of doctrine, which is called Zen. It's a practice outside of words and letters, because words and letters are the cloud of probability and we collapse it. So he says, and I'll go on maybe another paragraph here, the most important thing is for people of great faculties and sharp wisdom, which is everyone in this room, to turn the light of mind around and shine back and clearly awaken to this mind before a single thought is born. This is the very definition of what in Buddhism is called mindfulness. How is that so? Remember now, we in our Zazen, as a first step, collapse the cloud of probability through concentration, jodaki, this beautiful posture, this attentive mind, this intent attitude, this awakeness, all senses working. We enter the actual world, we collapse the cloud of probability. The photon has been exposed and becomes itself. We see that it's done. Therefore, we are not so entangled with it. Not so entangled now. It's done. Now we notice something. Remember what Yuan Wu said about this. We notice something when we're no longer fighting it, struggling with it, holding on to it, rejecting it, or separating from it, which is what we call ignorance. When we just observe it intently, we begin to see something about it. Something that I could say is shining or emanating from it. It's the fact that it is, that it appears. How mind-blowing. Now, Paul Tillich, a Catholic philosopher, back in the 20th century, that was a long time ago, showing you how old I am, I read a book by him in college, and he said the most mind-blowing, overwhelming, overpowering, acute question I could ever ask myself, and remember now, this is a Catholic philosopher, is the question, why is there something rather than nothing at all? In our Zazen, we see that there is something. We begin to enter that. We begin to look into it. Because we're not fighting the world and struggling with thinking, we've collapsed the cloud of probability, and we've seen that as a collapsed cloud, it's on the screen, it's done, there's no need to toy with it, play with it. I can, but it's irrelevant. And if I do, then I'll just collapse that too. That it is emanating this fact. And I enter that, and I get very curious about it. Now I notice something intently when I look at it. It's not just that it is. That would be only going halfway to say the world is. It's more than that, and this is the critical step. It appears. Hear the difference now. It is versus it appears. Is means that it's out there somewhere. In other words, I turn around and it still is there. There's a word for that. It's called existence. Exist, to stand outside. The sixth patriarch of Zen said from the very beginning, not a single thing has ever stood outside. I see first that it is, but next I notice that what I mean by that is it appears in me. It appears in me. Now I'm what? Now I'm, as Yuan Wu put it, I'll reread what he said. He said, the most important thing is for people of great faculties and sharp wisdom to turn the light of mind around and shine back and clearly awaken to this mind before a single thought arises. This is the key. This is the critical piece. Now, for someone starting out in Zazen, this is probably way too esoteric at this point. Don't worry about it. The task early on is to collapse the cloud and be attentive. But what is mindfulness? What is this term that is the core of our Buddhist practice? Every form of Buddhism, it's the core, mindfulness. Mindfulness is seeing that something appears. Having it be in your awareness and noticing its appearance, that is the most intimate, most perfect definition, I feel, in my humble opinion, of mindfulness, is to observe something. Now, in your Zazen, it may be the breath. It may be a koan-like move. It may be just the actual unfolding of the moment-to-moment experience of this world here called Shikantaza. But we don't just hold on to that, pushing away thoughts. We observe it as a finished product that is shining its appearance. It is in me. It is in me. I don't know what I mean when I say me, and I don't quite know what I mean by is, so I want to wonder and penetrate into that. I want to enter it. This is the shining of the light. This is going to the place before a single thought arises. This place is very intimate, very dark, very silent, very blue sky. We enter that and we push and push in that direction. This is a critical factor in our Zazen. I feel that this is probably the one thing that I need to impart, and I will do it over and over again at the risk of sounding incredibly repetitive, simply so that I can come from every angle and help you as best I can to really grasp what this movement is of your being, not just your thinking mind, your being. You enter it with your whole mind and body in Zazen. You enter it. It is deeply healing, deeply settling. You enter a state when you look in this direction, which my teacher, Richard Clark, used to call looking north. He would say this quote all the time. He would say, people are looking south to try to find the North Star. We all want to find this place of perfection, happiness, freedom from suffering. But we are looking south. What is looking south? Looking south is, here I am as an entity with characteristics, peering out at a world outside me. That's called looking south. What is looking north? That's the essence of our practice. Looking north is learning to collapse the cloud of probability, develop dispassion about it, because we realize that at the moment we are aware of it, it is complete. All the karmic factors, meaning the causes and effects, from the beginning of time to this moment where I collapse the cloud, are done and completed, and it could not have been anything other than what it is, so that I've liberated myself from fighting it or clinging to it, so I can begin to notice what it is shining and be very wondrously curious about that and enter it. Enter it. This is the shining of the light back on itself. And when we do this to some degree of depth, we begin to enter these states that are very well described in Zen practice. The initial state is called dhyana. It's a state of deep rest and a sort of a peaceful joy and a wonderful feeling in the body-mind. But when we stop there, we are stopping ourselves. We're not allowing ourselves to truly enter all the way. Completely. When you completely enter, you enter a state called samadhi. That's when time disappears, your body disappears. As Dogen, the great Zen master from the 13th century, said, this is dropping off of body and mind. This is the ground from which kensho, or awakening, can burst. Every single person in this room needs to learn to enter that space. You can do it. We will work together. We will find a way to enter this space, to get rid of the barriers, the blocks, the cloud of probability smothering over our purity of Zazen. This is the process, the practice of Zen. This is what it is truly about. We'll read maybe just a little bit more if you want to move before we end. We have another 5 minutes or so. So he said here, this mind can produce all world-transcending and worldly phenomena. When it is forever stamped with enlightenment, your inner heart is independent and transcendent and brimming over with life. As soon as you rouse your conditioned mind and set errant thoughts moving, then you have obscured this fundamental clarity. You notice what he says now? You haven't destroyed it. You've just covered it over. It's always there. It's here right now. It only gets obscured by our thinking, the so-called cloud of probability. If you want to pass through easily and directly right now, not some future time, just let your body and mind become thoroughly empty, so it is vacant and silent, yet aware and luminous. Exactly what I've been talking about. Inwardly forget all your conceptions of self and outwardly cut off all sensory defilements. What is a sensory defilement? It's thinking about your senses. It's naming them. It's grabbing onto one, pushing away another, putting them in a category, deciding that you like it or don't like it, rather than observe it. When inside and outside are clear all the way through, there is just one true reality. Remember what we said now. You can't separate hearing from seeing, from feeling, from thinking, from tasting, from sensing. It's one fabric. Then eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and conceptual mind, form, sound, smell, flavor, touch, and conceptualized phenomena, all of these are established based on that one reality. This one reality stands free of and transcends all the myriad entangling phenomenon, which is basically our thinking, planning, worrying. The myriad phenomena have never had any fixed characteristics. They are all transformations based on this light. And that's where I'm going to end, but I want to define what he means here. What we think are fixed characteristics, some solid world out there, right? Remember that it has an isness, it has a present outside of my knowing, is actually the light of mind, the light of mind, or the light of appearing, or the light of knowing, shown through the effects of cause and effect, karma. And it comes out as carpets, books, sound, incense smell. It's all the same substance. It comes from the same source. It just looks different because of causes and effects. So, without getting any more complicated than that, we'll end there tonight.